Welcome to Dorkness to Nightmare.
This is a mini-sode mini-series that will take a look at monsters and what they have to say about humanity.
We are Alan and Em, and welcome to Dorkness to Light.
This is the penultimate episode of our October mini-series, which we are calling Dorkness to Nightmare.
Now, we haven't talked about the scheduling before, but as you just revealed, there is only one episode after this, and then later in November, like after we've recovered from putting out seven episodes in a month, and have taken a few weeks off, we'll do a follow-up and feedback episode.
Not to pat ourselves too much on the back in advance, but I was pretty proud of our scheduling because we have posted an episode every Wednesday and Sunday. So this has essentially been your Halloween Bible study. And today, you are going to be our discussion leader.
Because we're going to talk about some of the weird stuff that is, or maybe, in the Old Testament.
For example, Lilith, Nephilim, unicorns. Strap in, kids.
In terms of Lilith, one quote I saw said that whereas Lilith is somewhat known in secular and pop culture, she is hardly known at all in the world of the church or the synagogue. And there's one verse in particular that mentions Lilith, Isaiah 34:14, at least in the New Revised Standard Version. It says, "Wild cats shall meet with hyenas, goat demons shall call to each other, there too Lilith shall repose and find a place to rest." That's it. That's the list. So why the legend?
There's a lot of discussion and disagreement about the proper translation of
yes.
that verse in specific, but also the word Lilith.
Mm-hmm.
Because it appears to be a proper noun. It's almost always capitalized.
Mm-hmm.
But usually the word is listed as it is there with animals or beasts mm-hmm. or monsters. There are some versions where Lilith is referred to as the mother of beasts.
Mm-hmm. And this is where we get into the interesting realm of translation.
Mm-hmm.
As we say, when we want to sit down, if we really want to study the Bible, what we're talking about is interpretation. What we don't realize is that some interpretation has been done for us, because the act of translation is itself an interpretation. Just as an example, this particular word often appears as a more general noun, like night creature, in the NIV version, a very popular English language version, or night monster in the Living Bible, or night hag in the Revised Standard, night bird in the English Standard Version, or how about wild goat in the Darby translation, or our good friend the King James, as Seder.
To tie back into last episode, was written at the same time as Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. People were really down with Seders at the mm-hmm. time.
Legend has arisen, sort of a folk theology that involves Jewish mythical and mystical theology to read between the lines of other verses and read Lilith into the story, most notably as Adam's first wife.
This is such an interesting concept, and unfortunately has a lot of sexism connected to it, because as part of the legend, she was not made from Adam's rib. Mm-hmm. She was also made from dust. They were equals. And some of the theories of why she was evil is that she wanted to either be in charge of Adam or in some cases just be partner as mm-hmm. opposed to servant. And that was just super not okay.
And the main story that sort of developed this earliest was about 1000 BC. And what we don't know is if the legend originally is of Jewish origin. Pseudo-Talmudic is if it's intended to be a teaching and extrapolation of what we have. There are actually some theories that say this story may be a satire on Jewish things because it's so weird and possibly sacrilegious.
Yeah.
But the idea is that Lilith and Adam disagreed about, let's just say, the power dynamics of their relationship, and she flies away. And this is where the verse, God saw Adam and realized it was not good for him to be alone. That reading in particular says, well, Adam really does know what it means to be alone because he had a partner and lost the partner. So he knows what it is to be alone. The concept of alone has meaning to him in this Lilith version of the story. And then Eve is created. And as you said, the relationships and leadership, power, dynamics are different with Eve. And then that is the model. Now, one of the legends hypothesizes Lilith as the snake that comes back and tempts Eve and then Adam in the garden, sort of bringing their relationship full circle.
It's interesting, for sure, all of these theories about Lilith. There's also some things to consider, which is that Lilith is a loan word, essentially, mm-hmm. and is possibly of Babylonian origin. It's sort of hard to tell, like, was this a situation of folding in other folk legends into biblical...
You remember when we talked about Genie?
Mm-hmm.
And we had the sort of two versions of Genie that developed, and the words were similar enough that the two meanings sort of got smushed together.
Mm-hmm.
Is that sort of what you're saying? That we might have a person named Lilith, and we might have another type of noun of similar sounding, maybe from a different language?
Exactly. Here's a really simple question about Lilith that we do not have an answer to. Was she a person?
You would think that would be a pretty simple question.
Because
it is not.
Was she a goddess who sort of got folded into this right. folk tradition? Or was she a monster? Was mm-hmm. she some sort of non-human being, not unlike a djinn?
Mm-hmm.
Was she some sort of other non-human creature?
If you throw in this shape-shifting into the serpent, and she can fly, I'm just throwing out options. That maybe human might not be the right description. The other thing we have to say is, biblically speaking, to the extent that a Lilith story exists,
right.
to the extent that it does, the versions that we've talked about are all pre the fall even. So maybe originally in Eden, before the fall, we could fly and shapeshift. Okay, I just made that up, but... we know it was a totally different world back then.
So let's just take a moment and say that in the Old Testament, the entirety of the pre-fall is about 27 verses.
And
there's some weird, trippy stuff in that. Like talking snakes, for example, a thing that everyone just goes, oh yeah, super normal. What?
Super-powered poisonous apples.
Cool. We're just going to roll with that? Awesome. Great. And the Old Testament, after that first chapter and a half, does not stop being weird.
Genesis 6:4. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days and also afterward, when the sons of God went to the daughters of human and had children by them. They were the heroes of old, men of renown.
No further explanation needed, right? Got that. 100%.
Weirdly enough, I think that historically, Lilith has had a pretty long life outside of biblical studies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, including from Michelangelo and other artists and poets and, you know, a feminist icon now, with little, if any, mention within the church. And I think maybe Nephilim is one of those things that within the church, we hear it, we think about it. It's only been a couple of decades, I think, that people have discovered this crazy Bible thing and have decided, ooh, every sci-fi and horror show, now, after you do your Wendigo episode, you get to your Golem episode.
And then your Nephilim.
And then you get to your Nephilim episode.
It feels like church elders sitting around a table. All right, excellent. So we're going to be planning our sermons and our liturgy, and we're going forward and we're putting together like our book of prayers, and we're making sure that we've got everything. We're not going to talk about Nephilim, right? Like, we all
this
agree.
Is just, okay, we're
all
skipping
agree
over
that
this, right?
We're literally just going to skip it. We're going to skip it. I'd like to. No, shut up. We're going to skip it.
Can we just take it out of the Bible? No,
I mean,
no, that we cannot
can't do
take
that.
It. Let's just not talk. Let's pretend it's not there.
We're just all going to collectively agree to not talk about Nephilim. Like, it's like Fight Club. Just don't mention Nephilim. Why not? Because then we have to talk about them. And it's going to get weird.
Folks of my generation may remember this more than you, but starting in around 1990-ish, angels had a real renaissance in terms of interest in books and just as a piece of pop culture. At that point, they really did sort of explode outside of the church into the rest of the world, from Touched by an Angel to New Age versions and other types of versions of angels. And I think it's sort of within that, as people thought, well, what does the Bible say about angels? You fell into this Nephilim. And I think that's about 10 years later, Nephilim started popping up. I mean, there is a subgenre in urban fantasy of angel romance-y type of stories.
And half-angels. If you go poking around in your paranormal romance section, there's always a fallen angel or a half-fallen angel or a son of an angel
who's
the Antichrist or something.
And all of that is speaking to this Nephilim story, I think.
Yeah.
We don't totally know what a son of God is or a daughter of human. There are many ways of interpreting those. Again, the most popular.
Drawing from these two very vague verses.
I did make, I think it may have been a tactical mistake in prepping for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Is I fell down Christian Nephilim YouTube.
Ooh, okay, now that is a long, dark tunnel, my friend.
The Nephilim guys, they look at the end of times guys and say, bring it. Bring
oh, yeah.
it.
Step
Come
to
on.
Us. Come on.
But there is some thinking that the phrase sons of God, as it's used there, does only refer to angels or angelic beings and some idea of angelic-human couplings, the offspring of which is Nephilim, half-human, half-angels. And there is some biblical evidence that this is where giants and Goliath and folks like that come from. I will point out that in the narrative of the Bible, the Nephilim story is literally about five verses before God saying, I need to destroy this thing by a flood.
I need to
salt
the
earth. And start over. So one of the interpretations is it was the presence of the Nephilim. And I really don't want to go into why that's such a terrible thing, but that is a very terrible thing in a particular interpretation of bloodlines and humans. And
if you corrupt the gene pool, then you prevent the birth of Christ,
yes.
Because there is
no human,
there is no daughter,
there's no
of man left. It gets weird and kind of gross, and also sometimes there's a Stargate. So we're just
okay.
gonna.
The word Atlantis was used on one of the videos. It was just one.
Here's the thing: if you're going to be an Atlantis theorist and a Nephilim denier, I don't know how you thread that.
Ah, yeah. But it's notions like that that give rise to the Da Vinci Code.
Mm-hmm.
Or Preacher, where we have, well, maybe Jesus married Mary Magdalene and they had children and those children exist today. So there's always this weird intrigue about divine and human
bloodlines
and how that works. And then at some point you have to say, well, as a evangelical Protestant, I certainly can't believe any of that. I mean, how even would that, how is this possible? And then you come to the incarnation and Christmas and you say, well, we do believe it did happen in some way.
Once. So maybe?
We do have biblical stories of people trying to destroy the line that would eventually give us Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
But it's not crazy. It is definitely still crazy, though. And let me just say, thank you for taking this collective bullet so that I didn't have to go down this rabbit hole and our listeners. We did it so you don't have to.
Let me pull us back just into pop culture just for a second.
Oh, yes. Please bring me back to someplace that makes more sense.
Hey, wait a minute. I did see a Goodreads list that had over 200 Nephilim books on it. And they included angel romance books, but sort of broadly put that under the category of Nephilim books. Again, many in urban fantasy. And I will say that I have read a few Christian novels on the topic by L.A. Marzulli, a trilogy of Nephilim stories. I read all three. The name of the second book, The Unholy Deception, sort of gives away basic elements of the plot, mm-hmm. shall we say?
Mm-hmm.
Aliens, demons, maybe alien demons, maybe demonic aliens. The books are pretty bad. I want to give myself a pat on the back for this. The three books, I in total gave them 4 stars. Not 4 stars each. I mean, 1 star, 2 star, and 1 star.
Oof.
There is a Nephilim Wars comic book currently on Kickstarter, and by the time this episode comes out, there will still be a few days left.
We will put a link to that in the episode and on the Tumblr. I don't know why. I am always more down with Nephilim in comics than I am in books. I think it might be because...
There are some pretty cool visuals you can get. Is that what you're...
Bingo. Because if you just lean into the visuals of Nephilim, I'm like, that's just a cool creature concept. If you try and write 30,000 words on why this makes sense, it's just a house of cards.
I visited some of those websites. I still have the shakes.
Mm-hmm. It just either gets really crazy or really silly.
Yep.
But if you can paint it in really broad strokes, it can be really cool. Our friend Peter Franson
mm-hmm.
played with the concept of Nephilim some in his sci-fi sort of near futuristic series Spirit Blade. Mm. Again, really cool, interesting concept. I'm just not interested in reading 35 chapters on why you think this makes sense. If you try and convince me that this is part of a sensible systematic theology, it's not.
So you're saying the 300-page novel sounds much better than the 300-page nonfiction attempt to summarize, coordinate, and systematize? But the 300-page graphic novel would be best?
Yes. I just want to see half demon, half human, all angel, battle mechs, messing it up 1,000 years in the future, fighting like the Robo Beast of Babylon. That's all I want.
So you want Guillermo del Toro's Pacific Rim 3, The Nephilim Strike Back.
Look, how good would that be, though? I want you to just take a moment and think about that. Hellboy meets Pacific Rim with a dash of Pan's Labyrinth. Sign me up.
Now, I will say, talking about these sort of weird Bible, weird Old Testament things, the nice thing about reading a little bit about Lilith is that it made the Nephilim seem not less crazy and weird, but at least not unique.
Mm-hmm.
There are other weird things in the Old Testament. Couple others that you wanted to mention?
How about this one? Sea monsters? A thing that I found interesting is there are verses like in Psalm 74 where it says, you divided the sea by your might, you broke the heads of the sea monsters, you crushed the head of Leviathan, and you gave him as food for the creatures of the wilderness. Which implies that sea monsters are everywhere, but that Leviathan is a specific thing. I actually don't see enough stuff with Leviathan.
Leviathan often gets a capital letter also when it's translated, when that being, thing, concept is mentioned a couple of times in the Old Testament.
Isaiah 27:1. In that day, the Lord with his hand and great and strong sword will punish Leviathan, the fleeing serpent, the twisting serpent, and he will slay the dragon in the sea. So people know, like, there are dragons in the Bible, right? Mostly in Revelation, but
right,
they're in there.
We'll point out that Psalms, we can say, is a poetic book. Isaiah, a prophetic book. Those are the types of biblical literature that are prone to some imaginative thought.
Mm-hmm.
So that is often how these things are dismissed. But they're there and need to be dismissed.
Yeah. So like you can't just ignore it. You need to acknowledge it a little bit.
I think Nephilim get ignored.
Yeah,
some
completely.
Of the other things. And you mentioned unicorns.
Oh, we're getting there.
Those sorts of things, the instinct, the impulse here in the educated 21st century is to dismiss that, find a way to interpret around that.
I think that Lilith and Leviathan both get a bit of disservice because people want to say either Lilith didn't exist, fine, whatever. You just want to cut that out of your mythology, fine. But when people do talk about Lilith, it's as a human physical creature. And not as a, like, shape-shifting, possible siren.
Flying.
Like, flying beast of some variety. And Leviathan gets downgraded to Loch Ness Monster, to whale, to really big fish.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's also really disrespectful. I don't know. Like, again, I just want the comic book where we get to see Lilith and Leviathan both as, like, sentient monsters.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be pretty cool.
There is a comic book that I think might come pretty close to that. There is a book, I believe currently at around its second or third issue, called Dark Ark.
Okay, I'm already down with this.
And this is the sales copy. The wickedness of mankind has moved the Creator to destroy the world by way of the flood. Noah has been tasked with building an ark to save his family, but this is not that story. For darker powers have commanded the sorcerer Shrey to build his own ark and save the unnatural creatures of the world. Vampires, dragons, the Naga, and the Manticore. But what will happen on a vessel crawling with monsters where insidious intrigue and horrific violence are the rule of law? And just if you think this isn't legit, it's being written by Cullen Bunn. A real legitimate comic book writer. And I've heard mostly good / interesting things about it. So maybe a comic book that is at least close to that, in spirit.
Yeah, I'm
exists.
I'm very down for this. provided there are also unicorns on this boat.
Get to unicorns.
There are more verses that use the word unicorn. Then there are verses that mention Lilith or Leviathan by name. The word monochloros is used 9 times.
Mono for one, chloros, horn.
That okay. is correct. And not all in the Old Testament.
Uh-oh.
Now, of course, most people's thought is, okay, this is a rhinoceros reference.
Mm.
Probably. However...
There's a chance.
If you're going to be a biblical literalist and you're not going to have somebody riding on a unicorn,
why bother?
What is even the point at that point?
I read that there's also a thing, at least in the King James Version, called a cockatrice.
Yes.
A legendary monster, half rooster, half snake, with the ability to turn people to stone at a glance.
Yes. This is another one of those translation weirdness situations, because the Hebrew creature was a sepha, which means poisonous serpent or viper or something of that nature. And it's, again, sort of unclear whether this was a mythological monstrous creature or just a reference to any dangerous poisonous serpent. But that was the word of choice to explain that concept
particular being,
cockatrice.
And that is in the King James Version. So if you're a literalist and a King James Version only, not that if you're one, you have to be both of those, but the Venn diagram does overlap quite a bit. Then, like M says, we want unicorns versus cockatrice in your fiction, in your art, in your comic books.
I wish I could remember who said it, but a phrase that's always sort of stuck out to you and me is, the Bible is certainly mythology. It is a work of mythology and legend and lore and all of that. It just happens to be mythology that, as Christians, we believe to be true. So as with any other folklore and legend, your mileage may vary. And we're not saying that all Christians believe these things. We're not saying that if you are a Christian, you have to believe these things. I dunked on biblical literalists for like half of this episode. So I'm not saying that I believe any of these things are actually really, really true. But we are fans of mythology. We think mythology is interesting. We think that Christianity should be allowed to be as weird and funky and crazy
and cool
as any other mythology. You got your crazy legends of Loki, and you got your crazy stories about Osiris and like dwarves springing out of rocks when they fell down. We have Lilith. We have Leviathan.
We have Nephilim, baby. Beat that!
I'm not going to throw down the gauntlet on who has the weirdest religion, because the point is that everyone's religion is weird.
The weirdness isn't necessarily a good thing. I think our point is, it's not necessarily a bad thing either.
Let your folk tales be crazy and over the top. Talk about fairies. Talk about ghosts. Believe in whatever crazy, weird, funky fairy tales that gel with you.
Forget Austin. Forget Portland. Keep Christianity weird.
Mic drop.
Come back soon for the next installment of Dorkness to Nightmare. The ringing of the bell commands you.
While you're waiting for the next podcast episode, check out our websites. DorknessToLight.blogspot.com contains reviews, essays, and other similar ramblings.
And DorknessToLight.tumblr.com, which contains some of that material, as well as top tens, cool photographs, memes, and religious puns. We also run a general interest comic book podcast network, Relatively Geeky. That content can be found at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com.
Let us know what you think of this topic, this episode, or this podcast in general. Feel free to send your thoughts to us at dorknesstolight@gmail.com. We would also appreciate any ratings or reviews left for the podcast in the iTunes store to help like-minded people find us.
Our intro, outro, and promo music is by Anderson Kale. Check them out at andersonkale.com or search iTunes to purchase their music.
Thanks for listening.